You're about to hear from a guest who is thrilled to see the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell in the military and who feels it is best for our military to have homosexual men and women serving openly.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
A few weeks back, I got an email asking if I would join someone on the air on the radio show of Reverend Jesse Lee Peterson, and we would be debating the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. I was told that the gentleman that would be on the other side saying that it was good to have homosexual men and women serving openly in the military was Dr. Nathaniel Frank, and the name rang a bell. That's right. Okay, I heard it somewhere, and absolutely, there was a reference to it. He is the author of an important book, Unfriendly Fire, How the Gay Ban Undermines the Military and Weakens America. So we are very much on the other side of the fence in terms of our positions here, but we had limited time to debate and interact. I know he's got a lot to say. He's written extensively on this. He's testified publicly about it. He holds a PhD and MA in history at Brown University, and his research and opinions have been cited on the congressional floor and syndicated columns, the blogosphere, New York Post, Advocate, National Review Online. So I asked him if he'd join me on the air. Obviously, I've got a very different position than him, but I thought it would be good for you, our listening audience, if we had a public and open discussion. 866-34-TRUTH is always the number to call, 866-348-7884. And if you're involved in the military, have a military history, and you'd like to weigh in on your view of the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, please take this opportunity to call in 866-34-TRUTH. I'll have Dr. Frank on with me through the next half hour. He was able to give us that much time, but we'll probably continue the discussion afterwards. And on our website, askdrbrown.org, click on The Line of Fire. We've got a link to his book, Unfriendly Fire. Dr. Frank, thanks so much for taking time to join us today.
Sure, happy to be here.
Now, the great majority of my listeners would share my convictions and views on this. So in that sense, you'll be representing the minority opinion, but I'm sure some of my listeners agree with you already. Why is it, just succinctly, that you feel that Don't Ask, Don't Tell was really standing in the way of the best interest of the military, and why you're so pleased to see that Don't Ask, Don't Tell has been repealed?
I would cite briefly three reasons, and the first one is talent, the second one is uniformity of treatment, the third one is values. So talent, under Don't Ask, Don't Tell, the military lost 14,000 service members, and all the research shows that there is actually no negative impact, aside from perhaps how people feel in some cases, from having gays serve in the military, you know, openly or not. So to eliminate 14,000 service members over 160 different occupational specialties, including Arabic linguists, when we're engaging in a war against, in some cases, people who speak Arabic, was highly irrational policy, and it was an unnecessary. Secondly, uniformity of treatment. In the military especially, it's absolutely critical that people who are similarly situated have the same rules applied to them, and that was not the case with the ban on homosexual conduct in speech, but not heterosexual conduct in speech. And then finally, there's a values issue. America, the Constitution, the Declaration, and our greatest traditions value equality. It's not an absolute, but the idea that, again, for no reason, we were kicking out people and placing a peculiar burden on people just because they were gay, I think that conflicts with America's values, and that's what the military ended up saying as well.
All right, just a quick question. Thanks for laying that out clearly for us. In fact, well, I'll ask you this question, and then we'll dive into this on the other side of the break. But two questions, actually, I want to put forth to you, and then we'll continue the discussion on the other side of the break. One, if it could be demonstrated that gays serving openly hurt our military readiness, would you still fight for it? And two, are you open to a full review of the matter in a few years once we have time to flesh this out? We'll be back with your answers. Stay with us.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
My guest this first half hour, Dr. Nathaniel Frank, Senior Research Fellow at the Palm Center at the University of California, Santa Barbara, teaches history on the adjunct faculty at New York University's Gallatin School, and is best known, in terms of our discussion here, for his widely praised book, Unfriendly Fire, How the Gay Ban Undermines the Military and Weakens America. He is thrilled to see the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell in the military. Obviously, we differ strongly on that, which is why I wanted to bring him on so he could air his viewpoint. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. If you'd like to weigh in either way on this, especially if you have military background, online, askdrbrown.org. Click on The Line of Fire. So, Dr. Frank, the two questions that I had posed right before the break, number one, if it could be demonstrated that homosexual men and women serving openly in the military would hurt our military readiness, would you still be fighting for it? That's one. And two, would you be open to a full review of the matter once this has been fleshed out a few years, say 3 years down the line after the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell?
Right. Very good questions, particularly the first one. You know, I thought about that a great deal as I was doing the research over the years on this issue. If it were to be demonstrated that open the gay service hurt readiness, then what you would have, if that were the case, would be different values in conflict. And that's, you know, that's routinely the case in society. And if, for instance, it was demonstrated that there was a village somewhere where people hated Jews so much that if Jews went into the village center, there would be riots and there would be disruption of the public culture, would it justify banning Jews from the village center? I don't think so. So it depends on what the values are that you have and how you prioritize them. Certainly, military readiness is absolutely essential to the defense of our nation. But, you know, racial integration was the right thing to do, and it took several decades to do it right, and there were a lot of growing pains, and there were a lot of disruptions, frankly. Same with women. And now in the wake of Iraq, there are amputees who are allowed to continue serving. These are values that America holds dear, many Americans, most Americans, I would say, the general value of equality. And so I think I'd be hard-pressed to get to a point where I would see so much disruption that I wouldn't favor letting it happen anyway. But, of course, having studied it for years and years and years, there have been no disruptions abroad, and so far none. Well, let me say no disruptions that undermine readiness. It doesn't mean that people aren't complaining here or there or something.
All right. Well, just to jump in then, there is then, in your view, I know you don't believe this would be the case, but that you are saying that the question of, quote, equality and values trumps the issue of military readiness and preparation, whereas this is about the military, because there's no civil right to serve in the military. It's not a constitutional right in our country. And in fact, when you mention Jews or women or amputees, that's quite distinct from homosexuality, which relates to attractions and behavior. So that's what surprises me, is just it does seem that what some have posted that were in the military when I asked this question, It does seem that the bottom line in your case is not military effectiveness, but rather catering to a special interest group. You know, that's
Let me respond to that and clarify. As I said, military readiness is absolutely essential. I am an American. I am an American who believes we need a strong military, even if I sometimes disagree with what it does. Mm-hmm. And so, no, I'm not saying that equality trumps military readiness, full stop, pure and simple. What I'm saying is the integration of women in the military is a value that a lot of people support and that, frankly, the military needed in order to keep enough bodies in there, and that has caused far more disruptions and challenges to readiness than any aspect of homosexuality in the military besides the political conversation bubbling up around it, and yet we did it. And likewise with racial integration. So I'm not saying that, you know, in an analogy, you're not comparing the experience of being gay to the experience of being female or a racial minority. I'm simply saying that when it comes to conflicting values, you have to look at it carefully. But I'm also not conceding that these are conflicting values, because in my view, and in the view of those who have studied this most closely, equality and uniformity and allowing gays to serve openly does not conflict with military readiness. But
right.
I understand your point is what if it did?
Right. And okay, I think we've pressed that as far as we could in terms of the different perspective ultimately on the equality issue, military readiness issue, because I keep speaking with people. When I fly and I meet military men and women, I ask them their opinion, and I get the full range of responses. And then I speak to many others officer positions and higher ranking and so on, and they're very distressed over it. I've been speaking to some that said they've been serving the military for years but have now gotten out because of this. So before I bring on someone that wants to come up from the viewpoint of other values as well and religious freedoms and things like that, you mentioned the loss of 13,000 men over a period of men and women over a period of X number of years having to do with being expelled under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. At the same time, there were like 55,000 that were expelled over drug-related issues, 40 to 50,000, I forget the exact number, over obesity issues, 40,000-something women for being pregnant. So the 13,000 is actually a tiny, tiny number. But you've done a lot of research on this. What's the research in terms of those who, for religious, moral conviction, said that they will not re-enlist or enlist? Because from what I can tell, it's way, way, way higher than this 13,000 number. In fact, it dwarfs it.
The percentage of people in opinion surveys that I've seen, and these were not representative samples at any rate, so we don't actually have good representative opinion surveys about this, but we do have some. They're done by the Military Times is the most prominent one. Suggested that up to 10% would leave and up to 24% would consider leaving, and much larger percentages on surveys in Canada and Britain said that they would leave. And when it came down to actually lifting the ban, almost no one left for that reason. Literally a handful of people cited it. And there's a whole social science about how opinion polls don't measure when it comes to social issues. They don't actually predict behavior well at all. It's not like voting polls. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people say this because it conflicts with their values, and yet when it... Look, if that were the case, we would have seen an exodus already attributed to that, it's hard to document why people leave. Some people say they're leaving for that reason because they were planning to leave anyway, but they want to sort of kick it to them because they're angry about it. But the military has met its recruitment numbers and retention numbers in spades since the announcement and since the repeal. It's been a very short time, but I'm confident.
Yeah, it is a short time. Yeah. So in other words, you're saying that those opinion surveys won't pan out. Of course, if they did, that would be
right.
Devastating to your position. And obviously, that's why I asked if you were open to the possibility of review in 3 years from now.
Sure.
Comprehensive review.
Research is almost always a good thing.
Okay. So one other question, then I want to bring in another voice to interact. And as I assured you in email, I'll be differing with you, but graciously. So I'm glad we can have this conversation. And I'm sure you've been in a hotter seat than this before with
right.
Not as much graciousness towards you.
So, yes, I appreciate it.
Yeah, I want to be totally candid, though. As a fellow author and researcher, I appreciated all the end notes. That's always nice to see. And when I was reading the Arab linguist chapter, boy, I came to the exact opposite conclusion. I thought it proved the opposite of what you wanted to prove, because you start with the story of one very important, very very gifted man serving in a key position as an Arab linguist. But then as he's getting harassed by some or just people making him uncomfortable because they think he's gay, he ultimately says, look, I'm gay, and either have me or don't have me. To me, that was an extraordinary example of selfishness and saying my feelings and my well-being is far more important than the security of our nation. And that's a bottom line thing to me, that people had to make this an issue as opposed to saying we care about our country, we care about what's best for our country, we care about military readiness. And if that means that I'm a little uncomfortable the years I'm in the military, that's not a big deal because I'm putting country first. It seemed that he put me first. That's just the impression I got when I read it.
Why? And the question is, why can't straight people who are uncomfortable with gay people be asked to sacrifice and feel a little bit uncomfortable? So again, I see the same facts and come to the opposite conclusion. So when you say, why are people making an issue of this? Who is making an issue of this? It's those who have insisted on an uneven law that targets gay people. What we're talking about and what I'm supporting is one policy applies to everyone. And if someone insists that it should be different than that, they're the ones who are making the issue, and they're the ones who are being selfish by saying, my values should trump yours, and because I'm uncomfortable with who you are, I should get to feel comfortable, and you shouldn't be able to serve your country.
Right. How do you feel about co-ed showers and co-ed dorms?
Well, I'm 40-something, and I did not grow up with that experience, and so I might be a little uncomfortable with it myself, and I wouldn't expect it to necessarily be imposed on people. Very different, of course, from being a gay person who in showers and locker rooms with straight people. It's just that many of them didn't know about it.
Got it. All right. We'll be back, but I think that's a telling question and answer. I'm going to be joined with Chaplain Gordon Klingenschmidt as well, who's got firsthand experience with this. Don't go anywhere.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, I want to get right back to my guest, Dr. Nathaniel Frank, author of the book Unfriendly Fire. We have a profound but respectful disagreement on the issues of homosexual men and women serving openly in the military. I want to say plainly, I appreciate anyone who wants to serve in the military. I appreciate anyone willing to give his or her life for our country or risk his or her life for our country. I deeply respect that, and I deeply feel that having homosexual men and women serving openly in the military long-term will prove to be the very wrong decision. Dr. Frank, I want to bring in on the conversation a chaplain. You're talking about values, equality, and someone that's working very close with the military as well. Chaplain Gordon Klingenschmidt, are you with us, Chaplain?
Yes, sir. God bless you, Dr. Brown and Dr. Frank. I'm almost doctor, working on my PhD in theology and finishing my dissertation right now, and a former Navy chaplain. It's an honor to speak to you, and God bless you in Jesus' name.
Thank you, sir. Neither Dr. Frank nor I are chaplains, though, so you have us on that. So could you just give very succinctly, and then I want to go back to Dr. Frank, your reasons, both on a military level and at a chaplaincy level, why this is a very bad idea to have homosexual men and women serving openly in the military?
Sure. Well, obviously, apart from my religious reasons as an evangelical chaplain, I believe we'll lose the blessing of God on our troops. But I think the Obama administration deceived the American people, as the DOD Inspector General admits now in their report that there was never a 70% approval rating of this. The statistics were leaked in a false way. In fact, I have the true Pentagon survey here in front of me, and let me just run through a few statistics and ask Dr. Frank to comment on these. Question 45, if you had a leader whom you believed was gay or lesbian, 91% of the troops said it was a negative or mixed impact on unit performance. Question 68, 85% of combat marine arms, 75% of army combat arms said it was a negative, very negative, or mixed impact if DADT was repealed. 29% would be open to showering with homosexuals. 71% said they would shower at other times, complain to leaders or chaplains, or don't know. And of course, you said up to 24% of the military would leave early. That's a 500,000 troops who may leave the service or implied that they would. It'd be a factor in their decision. And that's a 500,000 troops losing, lost from our national security, leading ultimately to a military draft.
So that would mean that even if 10% of those who said that they would leave, that's 50,000 or 500,000, that dwarfs the number of those that were expelled or that use being gay as an opportunity to get out of military. So, Dr. Frank, your thoughts?
Well, you know, I have to hand it to you. If you were making this argument before you lost and you were concerned about it, that would be one thing. It's almost more impressive to make the argument after the decision has been made and you're still expecting to see this, but by the reasoning of those polls, we would have seen a big exodus already. And we haven't, and the social science shows that these are very poor predictors of actual behavior. The idea that someone would commit their careers and their lives to serving their country in uniform, and then not just because gays are in their midst, because they know there's always been gays in their midst, but just because a ban is lifted on their speech and conduct and what they're able to, on being able to admit it, that these people are suddenly going to retire and flee is, I think, doesn't pass the giggle test. And it is exactly what didn't happen in those other countries where even larger percentages of people said that they would do this. Now, when you include the mixed and don't know in those statistics, I can probably turn it around, I don't have the report in front of me, and get something similar. So when you, what we know from the data is that over the last 10, 20 years, the trend has been absolutely clear that people care less and less about this, that young people in particular, who comprise the bulk of our military, do not care if they're serving with gays and don't want to impose a peculiar burden on their brothers and sisters in arms. So the fact that there are still people in the survey who don't like this is not surprising, but we don't set military policy by polling our enlisted personnel. If we did, we would never have integrated the military racially, and we probably wouldn't have women in the military, and then we'd have a draft, too.
All right. Chaplain, your response?
Well, again, I go back to what our troops said. Question 66, if open homosexuality impacts combat performance, is the impact only 9% of the troops said it was a positive impact. So even if you take out the people with mixed feelings or they don't really know how they feel, only 9% feel like it's positive, whereas if you put the negative and mixed feelings, 91% feel like it's a negative impact or mixed impact. If you take out the mixed impact, it's 45% negative impact. So 45% had strong feelings against, 9% had strong feelings for. That's almost a 5-to-1 ratio. And the rest of the people are probably afraid to answer the question. Their commander might, you know.
All right, so, yeah, just to jump in, because we're real short on time. I do want
to
say, I just want to say this, Dr. Frank, that we didn't have a chance to get into the larger issues of discipline, just because as universally recognized, and you can go to any gay newspaper for verification of this, that there's more promiscuity among gay men than straight men, universally recognized.
Okay,
there are far more health-related risks.
Verification of a statistic. Come on, we know better than that.
Are you going to deny the Center of Disease Control report after report after report, quote
if
it in magazines?
CDC, and that's different from citing gay newspapers.
So, no, I'm saying the gay newspapers cite these same reports. In other words, I'm not going to the religious right for the reports. I'm going to the gay newspapers that cite the reports about alarming rates of sexually transmitted disease, alarming rates of HIV positive and AIDS issues, alarming rates of promiscuity among gay men. I'm
but
just talking about the reports from CDC.
We have always had gays in the military, and what we've been debating is whether to lift the ban on admitting it. So it's actually going to be worse for any prospect of disease or anything like that if you drive this underground and you keep people from being able to be honest and open about who they are and what they're doing. So,
well, you know, what's actually the case is the exact opposite, as we heard from the former president of the American Psychological Association at a meeting I was at this past Friday, a man who treated tens of thousands of gay men and women in San Francisco and talked about once things became open and out, it brought a massive societal degeneration. And this is a guy who fights for gay advocacy. Hey, listen, we're out of time, but thank you, sir, for joining us. The book is Unfriendly Fire. To find out more, is there a website they can go to?
Well, unfriendlyfire.org is the book's website. And,
all right,
and I appreciate you having me on the show.
Yeah, maybe one day we can do a face-to-face in New York City if it ever works out and the interest merits it. But thank you again for joining
great.
Us.
Thank you.
All right. Chaplain Klingenschmidt is going to be staying on with us. We've got some other folks that will join in the conversation. Hey, may I emphasize to you that for me the bottom line is that we ourselves know God and touch him through prayer. And there's nothing more important we could do than take hold of principles of prayer and intercession. I've got 24 hours of teaching on two CDs for your computer or MP3 player, Foundations of Prayer, Foundations of Intercession. They're normally $20 each. I want to get these to you. It's over 24 hours of teaching just for $20, postage paid, Foundations of Prayer and Intercession that will rock your world and deepen you in God. Call us at 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978 to order. You can also order online, AskDrBrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us today on The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. We are discussing the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell in the military-related issues. A guest that I had on in the first half hour, Dr. Nathaniel Frank, the author of Unfriendly Fire. I'd asked him if he wanted to be on for a full hour, and he said a half hour would work better for him. So we're continuing the discussion in his absence, but I appreciate him coming on. And hey, if you can't take an honest, open interaction with people being civil about controversial issues, then you know then you've got some issues to work through. We can disagree passionately, but there's a civil way to have conversation that ultimately is going to bring more light than heat. I appreciate Chaplain Gordon Klingenschmidt joining in that spirit as well. Here's the number to call to weigh in, agreeing or disagreeing, 866-34-TRUTH, especially if you have background in the military, 866-348-7884. Online, askdrbrown.org. Click on The Line of Fire. Before we get to our other callers, back to Chaplain Klingenschmidt, your website is prayinjesusname.org, correct?
Yes, sir, and we have petitions there you can sign. We will fax all 100 senators to reinstate Don't Ask, Don't Tell as a good policy and protect military chaplains from having to do gay weddings in the chapel.
All right, so that again, I wanted to be fair to Dr. Frank and allow him to respond and answer questions, and I assured him I would do that when I asked him to come on. So I didn't get to say everything I wanted to say, and the same on your end. But there has always been a concern that this would be used to further push gay activism in the military, and that it would not just be a matter of, hey, we're now all serving equally, which of course raises all kinds of other questions in terms of what the military is supposed to accommodate and not accommodate. But the concern has been that this would now be an aggressive tool for gay activism, that this would now be an aggressive tool for a social agenda within the military. Do you feel those fears are unfounded, or do you have concrete evidence that they're quite founded?
They're quite founded, and it's already happening. The anti-Christian purge has already begun. I know personally a Navy chaplain has already resigned, an Army chaplain has already resigned because of the policy. 2,000 chaplains have written to the Pentagon demanding that they not be forced to perform homosexual weddings. Just last month, Jay Johnson, who is a Pentagon lawyer, issued a memo to all chaplains in the Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marines saying it is now mandatory that you must open up your chapel to homosexual weddings. Well, that's desecration of the chapel. Even Catholic chapels, Protestant chapels, Christians no longer have a sacred place to worship because the chapel will be desecrated and it must be opened up for homosexual weddings. And chaplains who don't participate of course, they're given an option. They're saying, well, you don't have to preside at the gay wedding. It's enough that they'll be punished if they don't open up the chapel. And that violates the 1996 Defense of Marriage Act. The lesbians are suing. I think 8 different couples are suing the military because they want equal pay. They want homosexual bonus pay and medical benefits for their same-sex partners. And the agenda has already begun in an anti-Christian way, not to mention our Christian troops who are forced to share common sleeping quarters, common shower facilities with people who may be ogling them or trying to turn the foxhole into a date night or trying to turn the Navy ship into the love boat. I don't think that's right, and our Christian troops need some kind of protection.
Now, we've just got 30 seconds before the break, but would you have the same concerns if it was a matter of co-ed dorms, co-ed showers, co-ed military service?
Absolutely. We don't make men and women shower with each other or sleep in the same bunk. And that's going to happen, unfortunately, with homosexuals.
All right. We'll be back June in Baltimore. You're going to join the conversation, so stay with us.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on the broadcast today, 866-34-TRUTH. My guest the first half hour was Dr. Nathaniel Frank, author of the book Unfriendly Fire, where he strongly advocated before the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell that we needed to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and that it was hurting the military to not allow homosexual men and women to serve openly. I've taken issue with that. There's far more discussion to have, but I wanted him to air his views. And now we're continuing the discussion, 866-348-7884. Online, askdrbrown.org. Click on the line of fire. Again, we're talking about the military. We're not talking about who works a job here in our regular society. We're not talking about who lives in your neighborhood. We're not talking about being fair and gracious to all human beings. We're talking about serving in the military and the unique situation of the military. And anecdotally, I keep hearing from people who are either not going to reenlist or who were in the Army and don't want their kids to go in the Army or Navy, Marines, whatever, or Air Force because of the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. 866-34-TRUTH, joined by Chaplain Gordon Klingenschmidt, his website, PrayInJesusName.org. June from Baltimore. Yeah, I remember our conversation and I sent you a copy of my book, so you've gotten the book by now.
Yes, I did. Thank you very much. That was very kind of you.
Well, sure thing. Glad to send it out. All right, so you wanted to weigh in on this, and I've got Chaplain on the line as well. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I don't have any military background other than my dad was in the military for a little while. But I have a very good friend who is a medical doctor who served in the military and who is gay. And I asked him about Don't Ask, Don't Tell when it was back in the 90s, and he said that it was really quite a misnomer because if you could find out, you were sort of obligated to tell, and that people were being outed all the time through the military doctor, and that he wrote a letter and said, you know, I can't do this anymore. But he really wanted to serve, and in serving, he gave up hundreds of thousands of dollars. He makes a lot more money. But he really wanted to serve and was deeply hurt by this whole Don't Ask, Don't Tell thing.
All right, Chaplain, would you like to respond to that, your thoughts?
Sure. Well, there was an argument made when they were about to repeal that somehow being outed is more honest and that you should be allowed to be honest and you should never be forced to lie about who you really are. And I agree with that, except God defines who you really are the day that you're born. Men are born with boy parts and women are born with girl parts, and God wants men to be men and women to be women. And when a man comes out and says, well, I feel a little bit feminine, I have an attraction towards other men, that's not who you really are. That's not who God made you to be. And coming out to claim that a man is really feeling like a woman is the most dishonest thing that he could do. So I think there's an integrity issue, and that's another reason homosexuals should not be allowed to come out.
All right, June, let's frame that differently. Thank you, sir, for the response. We're talking about romantic attraction and sexual behavior, right?
Yeah, I actually take issue with what the chaplain just said. You know, gay men are not necessarily feeling feminine.
Right, That's what I said. Let's frame it in terms of romantic attraction and sexual behavior.
Okay.
That it's not essentially who that human being is, because some people flip-flop. You know, there's a famous basketball player, female basketball player, married for years to her sweetheart from high school, then decides many years later that she's actually lesbian, and now she's with a woman. And then people flip-flop the other way, you know, years of homosexuality, then heterosexuality. And then some people say they're bisexual. So why is there a military right for the military to endorse whatever sexual behavior and romantic attraction a human being has? Why is that part of the military? Why do we need to think about that?
Well, first of all, I would agree that sexuality can be very fluid. However, my understanding, and I'm not gay, but I have a lot of people in my life who are, and my understanding is that this is not something that comes about as a whim, and that while it doesn't define a person, it is a part of who they are. And being forced to lie, being forced to hide, who they are, is in my view morally wrong. But also, you're denying people who want to be married. You're denying their partners.
Well, we're not talking about marriage. I mean, marriage is a separate issue. And again,
no, but I'm saying that in the army, there are people who are killed, for example, in the line of duty. Their families are taken care of, but people who are gay, their families are not.
Right, but again, the point, and I understand your perspective. I understand your perspective on this, but again, when we're focused on the military, this is a unique situation. You've got cohesion.
Why, Dr. Brown? You asked the question why it's so important, and that's part of why, because it does.
Right. But you've got men living with men. Okay, it's the equivalent of co-ed. Okay, if by definition a homosexual is someone attracted to the same sex romantically and sexually, right? Then this is the equivalent of co-ed showers, co-ed dorms, co-ed bonding, which is absolutely not good for military cohesion, and now puts the vast, vast majority of the people there who are straight under pressure. There's much more possibility of sexual harassment. There's much more possibility of disease and promiscuity, all of which is terrible for the military. So, again, to me, this comes down to selfishness. It's about me, and it's more important that I can be who I am than I can serve the military. I mean, can you at least see that perspective?
I would say that not in my experience, but in my friend's experience, people are not saying that they are uncomfortable. They're saying they're being outed. If you choose to go into the military and the rule is you can't tell anybody you're gay, most of the folks aren't going to tell. But people find out, and then they're expelled from the military.
But it's a tiny, tiny percentage. You're talking 13,000. You're talking about less than one-fourth or one-fifth expelled for, like, drugs or obesity. The point I'm making, though, is this should not be something imposed on the military, because you have unique situations in the military of showering together, of living together in dorms, of bunking together.
Dr. Brown, you know that there are gays already in the military.
But to the extent that they are public about it, makes everyone else uncomfortable around them. To the extent that now you're going to have
selfish.
No, it's not. It's not. Okay, so then I decide that men are going to bunk with women and shower with women. Are the women being selfish?
I would actually make a different argument, because, you know, when the Army was integrated racially, there were a lot of people who felt very strongly they should not be having to share a bathroom with
But that was based on prejudice. This is based on real issues that homosexual men are attracted to men, just like heterosexual men are attracted to women. Correct.
But that doesn't mean that if you're showering with somebody, you are, you know, both guys in your whatever they call it, your division or your troop, they're not necessarily, you know, going to be hitting on you just because they happen to be gay.
Okay, so they're not necessarily going to be hitting on women either. So if you were a woman in the military and the military said, hey, co-ed dorms, co-ed bunks, co-ed showers, you would be selfish then if you left, because not every man's going to be hitting on you or checking you out.
Uh-huh.
So that's the same thing. You can't call it selfishness. It is common sense. Hey, listen, June. I've got a bunch of other folks waiting, but I wanted to give you extra time because we had chatted last time. And if a relevant subject comes in again, please give us another buzz so we can continue the conversation, okay?
Sure.
All right. Thank you, June. Chaplain, before we go to the other calls, your thoughts, and then I'm going to get to as many calls as we can in the next segment.
Thank you. I would encourage everybody to please call their senator today. Call both of your senators and ask them to keep the defense language that was passed by the House that protects military chaplains from having to facilitate homosexual weddings in the military chapel. The 2012 NDAA, call your senators at 202-225-3121. Again, that's 202-225-3121. Or visit our website, prayinjesusname.org. And we will fax all 100 senators to keep military chaplains and chapels protected under the Defense of Marriage Act from having to facilitate homosexual weddings. That's being debated in the Senate right now.
All right, and again, your website, PrayInJesusName.org. And tell you what, let me grab one more call quickly. Frank in New York City, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Thank you, Michael. We all know that in combat situations, most of the time, blood is involved. Now, according to Dr. Professor Janet E. Smith, who holds the Michael J. McGivney Chair of Life Ethics at the Sacred Heart Major Seminary in Detroit, she has found that 75% of all gay men have had...
Well, tell you what, stay on, and you get to finish this on the other side of the break. We'll be back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right. Wish we had a few hours to be discussing this, but we'll bring things to a head now in these next few minutes. We've been discussing the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. The first half hour, I was joined by Dr. Nathaniel Frank, who's thrilled to see the repeal. His book is Unfriendly Fire. Then we've been joined by Chaplain Gordon Klingenschmidt, his website, PrayInJesusName.org. And Frank in New York City, back to you. You're explaining the issues in military combat. You've got blood. You have potential issues of contamination and all kinds of other things. And we know that there's a great increase in terms of sexually transmitted diseases and the like among the male homosexual community, or those identified as men who have sex with men. So you bring up some blood military-related issues when we had to cut you off before the break.
Yes, thank you, Michael. As I was saying, according to Professor Janet E. Smith, I gave you her credentials before, she has found that 75% of all gay men have had 100 or more partners, and 28% of them have had over 1,000 partners. And the average lifespan of the average gay male is 41 years old. Now, in light of these statistics, to apply these statistics to a military situation, I think, is unconscionable. To put it's almost as if our military has to fight enemies on a dual front. And I'm not trying to be uncharitable in saying this, but the gay lifestyle, it's mentioned in the Bible, is debased, as it says in Romans 1. And it's just truly unfortunate. I think our society is caving into political correctness at an alarming degree. Mm-hmm. And now it has affected our fighting men and women. And I just think it's so, so unfortunate.
All right. Hey, Frank, thank you, sir, for weighing in. I appreciate it. Let me say plainly that those statistics about lifestyle and even the degree of promiscuity will be hotly disputed by many, many, many. What I would say clearly is there is undoubtedly a higher rate of promiscuity among homosexual-identified men. Hey, common sense. Men tend to be more oversexed than women. Men plus men does not equal men plus women. Women have a tempering effect on men, among other things. And the higher degree of sexually transmitted diseases and so on, that's carefully documented. So it is certainly not a healthy lifestyle. The degree of promiscuity and the lifestyle issues, those statements would be hotly disputed. I just want to say that plainly. But the recognition that there is promiscuity on a higher level and sexually transmitted diseases and other health-related risks on a higher level, that's indisputable. Our friend Chaplain Viviana, so you're at the Fort Hamilton base in Brooklyn?
Yes, Army Base.
All right, I've got Chaplain Klingenschmidt on the line also. All right, so specifically on this military-related issue from someone working in a military situation, your thoughts?
Well, I live here. I get the temperature of the women, the families, and I get the temperature of many of the people in the military base here, and they are not pleased. I would encourage the chaplain that's on the line to not only pray in Jesus' name, that we will be active in Jesus' name, and to encourage other chaplains not to give in. He has a right to practice his faith the way it is. When this was passed, the military, Army Times said, we're here, get over it. So what has happened is that they are perpetrating this on the military because they can, and those that are advocating and saying, we just want a nice life, they are the ones that are not the real pushing behind this, because they said chaplains would not pass this, and chaplains would not have to perform or have anything to do with gay marriage, and they're lying through their teeth. I will lied.
Chaplain Klingenschmidt, and of course your website is devoted to taking action. The Pray in Jesus' Name happens to be the lawsuit you're involved with about the right or lack thereof to pray in Jesus' name. But Chaplain Klingenschmidt, this idea that chaplains now are told, hey, you're going to have to get used to this, or people with moral differences in the military are told, hey, moral religious differences, you're just going to have to get over this. Is that an accurate statement? Is this a real potential threat to religious freedoms within the military?
Yes. In fact, it's already happened. The Obama administration has already declared, and it is today's Pentagon policy, that military chapels in all 50 states must be opened to homosexual weddings. Well, that violates the 1996 Defense of Marriage Act. It essentially kicks the base chapel off of the federal property where marriage is defined only between one man and one woman, and it says, no, we're going to treat all chapels as if they're under the state law of Massachusetts, where homosexual weddings are allowed. Well, you can go to Texas with a Massachusetts gay wedding license, and you can have a military chapel opened up to perform and facilitate the homosexual wedding. It desecrates the land, and it insults the chaplains. That's why the Senate has to debate whether to keep the good House language. The House of Representatives already passed our language to protect military chaplains and chapels from desecration of homosexual weddings. Call your senators today, 202-225-3121, or sign the petition at prayinjesusname.org.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Chaplain Viviana. Mark in Phoenix, Arizona, retired colonel. We've just got about 30 seconds, but please weigh in clearly, sir.
Yes, my issue is I flew combat missions in Desert Storm, lived in a tent for 5 months, and the issue is combat effectiveness, meaning when you're deployed and you're in a combat situation, the government has responsibilities, the individual has responsibilities. My responsibility was to fly my jet and do my job, taking out the enemy and executing the mission of the United States Air Force, which at the time was Operation Desert Storm. The responsibility the military had to me was to provide me an environment where I could be laser beam focused on my mission. I didn't have to take a .22 go out and shoot rabbits to eat. I didn't have to go out and pound stones together at the river to do my laundry. All the support activities are geared towards one thing, the accomplishment of the military mission in an efficient, appropriate manner. Mm. Whenever we start getting into this social, my rights, all this stuff is compromising what the military is about.
Hey, Mark, I've got to jump in, but you have stated things very, very succinctly, very clearly, and to me, it's a bottom-line persuasive argument. Thank you for your service. Thank you for weighing in. I appreciate it, sir. Chaplain Klingenschmidt, once more, your website for our listeners.
PrayInJesusName.org. Thank you, Dr.
Right.
Braun.
Thank you for taking the time to be with us. All right, remember, as we're talking about prayer, I strongly encourage you to get hold of the 2-CD teaching series, 24 hours of teaching for just $20 postage paid, so it's a savings of over 50%, Foundations of Prayer and Intercession, the best teaching I've ever done on these subjects that will be tremendously eye-opening, life-changing, and practical for you. Foundations of Prayer and Intercession on 2 CDs for your computer or MP3 player. Call today to order at 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978, or online at AskDrBrown.org. Click on the line of fire. My bottom line, I deeply appreciate every man or woman who wants to serve in our military, and I appreciate those who identify as homosexual for their desire to serve in the military. But this is not a time for social experiments or arguments about equality. This is about what is best for our military. I'm sad to say, I believe we'll see. The feel of Don't Ask, Don't Tell is anything but best. Well, how do you feel about Christians taking over society and taking over government? Is that a goal we should have, or is that contrary to the gospel?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We just had a wonderful full first hour of broadcasting, talking with an author, very open advocate of the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell in the military, then joined by a chaplain, equally passionate, but on the other side of the issue. Of course, I would share his views on it and some fascinating calls. You can listen to that later today online, but we are switching subjects, and because I had two straight Fridays where I pre-recorded Q&A with e-questions and Facebook questions. I was trying to interact in real time on Facebook as well, but I didn't take your calls on two straight Fridays. So I want to open the phones one more time on a Monday for You've Got Questions, We've Got Answers, which means I'll cover some random ground that we wouldn't normally cover. Subjects, questions you have completely unrelated to the things we're talking about, I will find a way, a professional way, and a cohesive way to weave them in together. Here's the number to call, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884, online, askdrbrown.org, click on the Line of Fire. Now, I have a question for you. If you have a president who is openly Christian, or a presidential candidate, openly Christian, and saying, my Christianity, my faith is very important to me, and it'll be very important to me as I govern. Is that positive? Does that mean that we've got a better chance of having the blessing of God and godly values? Or is it potentially more negative or dangerous in that it would be pointed to some kind of theocracy? Or are we supposed to take over? Should we try to take over every branch of government and the universities and the media? Oh, not take over in terms of Sharia law type of takeover the way Islam would, but take over in terms of seek to have Christian leaders at the leading every university that we can. Seek to have Christian leaders in government. Seek to have people with deep biblical convictions leading the way in the media. Just by influence. In other words, not by taking over, not by saying, well, unless you believe the way we believe, you're not allowed in, but simply the way others with other ideologies have risen to the top, others with other ideologies have risen to the tops of universities and other institutions in the media, and they put forth their agenda, in many ways a secularizing of America, in many ways an anti-God or a godless America. Why would it be wrong for believers to just have much more role in society in that sense, quote, take over? Is that going the way of theocracy? Is that going to drive people away from the faith? Is that going to institutionalize Christianity? We know what happened when Constantine institutionalized Christianity, that many of the errors in the church today go back to that. Much of the cutting off of Jewish roots goes back to that. Much of the mixing of the political power mentality with the gospel goes back to that. So would that be disastrous? Would that be the wrong direction? 866-34-TRUTH. So that's my question for you. How much should we be trying to take over society? How good would it be to have someone overt in their faith leading the nation and saying, I'm leading this nation as a follower of Jesus and I'm operating on biblical principles? Now, biblical principles mean I'm fair to everyone. Biblical principles mean I am the president of all people, atheists, agnostics, Jews, Gentiles, Catholics, Protestants, evangelicals, Mormons, and down the list, and Muslims and Hindus and so on. But I will go based on Christian principles. Good or bad? Good or bad for the nation? 866-34-TRUTH. I'm looking at a column in USA Today by David Gushy. Christian professor, but he says Christian policies create unholy alliances. We'll be back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us today on The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. So how much should Christians be trying to take over the society? How much should we be trying to rise to the top in all areas of society, including government, including the presidency, judgeships, is that the word, judgeships, judicial appointments, universities, from presidents of universities to faculty, different positions in media, from news anchormen and anchorwomen to Hollywood producers and directors, on and on and on. The business world, even the sports world. How much should we be trying to, quote, take over? How much is this just a natural outcome of the gospel where we're called to make disciples of the nations, and the more people who come to faith, the more the nation will change? How much is that potentially leaning on the arm of the flesh? And should we be concerned if we have a potential presidential candidate who's very open and bold about his or her faith and says, hey, I would govern based on these principles? Are these good things? 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Online, we posted this question on the Ask Dr. Brown page on Facebook. So ask Dr. Brown on Facebook, do you feel that having a president who is very open about his or her Christian faith could be unhealthy for the nation? Could it pave the way for attempts to create a Christian theocracy? I am also taking your calls today on random subjects because this past Friday I was speaking in Phoenix at the National Association for Research and Therapy of Homosexuality, called NARTH, abbreviated as NARTH, encouraging them as an outsider about the importance of the work that they're doing and how it was so helpful to me in my research and work in these recent years in particular. But the timing of my speaking and the timing of the radio show were such that when I took the invitation, I didn't realize there'd be a conflict, so I was able to answer some things online but couldn't do it live on the air. So if you've got questions that would have been Friday questions, you know, the random, you've got questions, we've got answers, I'm going to take some of those today at 866-34-TRUTH. In fact, before I get back to the subject at hand about the influence of Christians on society to the degree that we should, quote, try to take over or rise to the top, etc. Before I get back to that, I want to share some pros and cons and take your calls. Thomas, who is driving a truck through Utah, listening live, was unable to stay on the line, but his question was the meaning of the word begotten in the Bible. Sometimes begotten means just that. You give birth to someone, a father. It says that so-and-so begot so-and-so. It would mean fathered, right? So the mother physically gives birth, but the father fathers that child. So begotten can mean that. Sometimes the word for begotten simply means one and only. One and only. As in John 3:16 or in John the first chapter, the 18th verse, does it say God the one and only or the only begotten Son? So sometimes the word can mean one and only, unique. And sometimes the word in, or a different word in Hebrew or Greek could mean begotten. So it all depends on the context. When we speak of Jesus as the only begotten Son of God, we're meaning it in two ways. We're saying in a unique way he's the only Son of God in the truest sense of the word, that he himself is divine and comes forth, proceeds forth from the Father and comes into this world. It could also mean, depending on the verse in question, and again, I can't say more because you're not on the phone to interact more with the verses in question, it could mean one and only and unique, all right? So the one and only and unique Son, or the one who proceeds forth from the Father. But Jesus is not begotten of the Father as if the Son of God did not exist at a certain point, and then God gave birth to him. God and some female consort gave birth to him. That would be complete heresy and very much unscriptural and contrary to the meaning of the biblical words. And I know this question was asked in particular in a Mormon context. Now, speaking of Mormons, let's think of this. Let's say we had a Mormon president who said, I really will operate based on my Mormon faith and my Mormon principles, and I want America to be a Mormon nation. Well, can you imagine the reaction to that, right? If you had a Muslim saying, I want America to be a Muslim nation, or say a Catholic saying, I want America to be a Catholic nation. Since the great majority of Americans profess to be Protestants, that would be the largest single bloc compared to Catholics or Mormons or others, there'd be quite a reaction. Well, how should we expect the rest of society to react if someone said, well, I plan to be a Christian, I want this to be as Christian a nation as possible, or I'm going to lead this nation as a Christian. Well, you can imagine that Mormons might be concerned. Well, do you mean evangelical Christianity? Catholics might be concerned. Do you mean Protestant evangelical Christianity? Jews might be concerned. Muslims might be concerned. Others would say, look, of course we rise to the top. You've got the Josephs and the Daniels in the Bible. Look at how God used them for national interests, international interests. Of course. Others would say, no, God takes the foolish things of the world to confound the wise. And it's by being meek and lowly and nobodies like Jesus and Paul and being persecuted and hated. That's how we bring about change. 866-34-TRUTH. What's your take on this? Ordell in Sandy, Utah, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi.
Hey.
Yeah, I just wanted to weigh in and just say, Jesus tells us to deny ourselves, pick up our cross, and follow him. And that would be following him into governmental positions, following him wherever we may go. The other thing is we're called by Christ to go forth and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them, and so forth. So, we should.
All right, do you have any concern? Let me ask you this. You're in Utah.
Yeah.
Are you a Mormon or not a Mormon?
No, I'm non-Mormon.
Okay. Would you be concerned if, say, it was a Mormon who would say Mitt Romney, and let's say he was a really, really religious Mormon, and who said, hey, I'm a Mormon, and that's going to be very important in how I lead this country. Living in Utah gives you a certain perspective. Would that concern you?
I would have concerns, sure. And I understand that, how other people would in other religions.
Right.
But even Mormons consider themselves Christian.
Right, I understand that. Okay, yeah, just wanted to get your perspective. But again, for you, it's just a natural outgrowth of the gospel. We get people saved. After all, we're told to pray for our
right.
leaders. And if we pray that they get saved as leaders, wouldn't that affect how they govern? Hey, thank you for weighing in. I appreciate it. 866-34-TRUTH. Kathy in Tampa, Florida, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi.
Hello. Go ahead.
Am I on the radio?
Oh, you are on the air right this moment.
Oh, okay. Yes. I'm responding to your questions, to openly say that, to govern in a Christian way. While I believe that Christian values should prevail, I feel that it would spark wars, and it would be provoking and divisive and institute factions and even interfere with church and state. But I do believe that God can work through Christians, non-Christians, and even enemies alike. And, I say to kind of leave it to God.
Okay, so what separation of church and state do you feel is actually valid in America? Because we have the freedom from religion as opposed to freedom of religion. But what concerns would you have that there could be a violation of separation of church and state?
Well, the violation of church and state, you're not supposed to get into the pulpit and to be speaking politics and telling people, what to do and how to do it. I think we can work underneath the net. I think we can, influence people, but I don't think we can directly tell them, what to do.
Mm-hmm. All right, and one other question, Kathy, just to get more understanding, and I appreciate your perspective here, and I'm sure many agree with you. The idea that pastors, leaders cannot specifically endorse candidates or mm-hmm. speak in these ways from the pulpit, many would challenge that and say that just came in the 50s, and that was basically brought in by the IRS, and that is absolutely contrary to our national history. So do you think it could be that a lot of our freedoms have been taken away from us by the government, and that, that
that's
we
true,
should, we
and it's happening all the time.
Got it. All right,
this
hey,
is
I appreciate
happening all the time. I
yep.
think we can tell, you know, the characteristics and the values that, you know, the government people can have, you know, or should have. I believe that, you know, you can work through that. You know, I honestly believe Christian values. I would vote for someone who had Christian values and you know. But to openly say that, you know, in a government situation, you know, to people to vote for and whatever, I think if I were in any other faith but a Christian, I think, you know, it would be very detrimental.
Yeah, got it. All right, all clear. We got to run, but thank you for weighing in. Back with more of your calls, 866-34-TRUTH.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I'm looking at an editorial, perhaps I'll write my own article on this tonight, by David P. Gushy, USA Today. He's Distinguished Professor of Christian Ethics at Mercer University in Georgia. He ends his article by saying, Christian politics is corrupting both Christians and politics. Our nation is in too much trouble to endure another round of the sorry spectacle. Let's do better. His argument, as the headline reads, Christian politics create unholy alliances. So I'm just asking the question today, if a leader, presidential candidate, said about his faith or her faith, I'm a committed Christian, I'm an evangelical Christian, and I plan to lead our nation, if elected, based on Christian principles. Is that moving towards a theocracy? Is it good? Is that the kind of thing you pray for? Hey, let God raise up Christian politicians and Christian judges and Christian educators and Christian business leaders and so on. And hey, if you have all these people that are in office getting saved, coming to the Lord, won't that affect things? And others say, no, that's pushing us towards this theocracy. We've got separation of church and state. 866-34-TRUTH. What are we looking for? What do we want to see happen? What would be right? You can weigh in. A lively discussion taking place on the Ask Dr. Brown page on Facebook. That's Ask Dr. Brown on Facebook. Tommy in Kings Mountain, North Carolina, thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Hey, Dr. Brown.
Hey.
I'd like to comment on the church and the state's role.
Yeah.
I do think that the Christian, the normal, I guess if you would say Christian, doesn't have a biblical view of a church and state. The church's role and the state's role, it is primarily the state's role to wield the sword upon evil. They must punish evil for what it is. I don't think that the Christian almost sees that as being wrong, and that's not wrong.
Got it. All right, so there is a certain role of government and authority which does carry out punishment of evil, and sometimes we and that's a God-ordained role. Of course, it's not sectarian. In other words, it's not specifically Christian or specifically Jewish as much as God ordained. Appreciate that. 866-34-TRUTH. And Tommy's point, of course, would be that the government is supposed to uphold certain moral principles, right? Those we have chaos and anarchy. If the government, say through the police and other means, the legal system did not uphold laws against murder, laws against rape, laws against theft, we'd have total chaos. Where do those principles come from? Are they just universal moral principles? Are they principles particularly that are found in our own historic documents? Are they principles that are derived from the Bible, and that's how they get into our historic documents? So that's how the church-state separation question gets a little bit more murky. Let me grab another call. Brenda in Decatur, Georgia, thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Hey, how are you?
Just fine, thank you.
Great, great. Thanks for taking my call. I was listening to your comments, what you were saying. I agree with that. We do live by moral law, not a man-made moral law. we live by the consciousness of God and righteousness. We say that as far as the separation of church and state, we don't live by that. We incorporate church and state because the church is the body of Christ, and that body is moving within this system. We're saying that we won't kill, we won't steal, we won't, you know, commit adultery. And when those things happen, we take it to the court system for justice. You know what I'm saying?
So you're saying that the principles of the Bible are intertwined throughout our society, and that even an atheist would agree with certain of those principles.
Exactly. Because, like I say, the problem with the, as far as an atheist, he or she may not want to declare there is a God, but they will, let's say, agree with the principles, and they will accredit that to whomever. But
right.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Got it. All right, all clear. I appreciate that. Thank you for weighing in, Brenda. 866-34-TRUTH. I want to read some of this editorial, but let me try to get in one more call. Andrew in Ames, Iowa, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi. I just wanted to touch in on the whole church and state thing and how I feel it's really unfortunate how far that has gone from what it was originally intended to be, because Thomas Jefferson, the one who first said, you know, we need to have separation of church and state, said that the church would always rule the state, but that the state was not to rule the church, and the state was not to say, you know, how you could worship or where you could worship or what you could worship, but that the state should stay out of that. But godly men and the principles that guided the church should always be in charge of, you know, what the government does and what the nation is, the direction our nation is supposed to be taken.
Right,
said,
so
you know,
it was right, and he was. This is not in the Bill of Rights or the Constitution. This was in a letter.
No, it's not.
Right,
nowhere
a letter
not.
From President Jefferson responding to concerns from Baptists. Where was it? Danbury, Connecticut, something like that. And
right.
So the conversation was about the wall to keep the state out of the church.
Right.
Because of concern, you know, you come from England. You've got the Church of England, which is the national church. And
mm-hmm.
and the king is, you know, has his role in the church. So it was assurances about that. And the idea
right.
that, say, it would mean that you can't have a cross at a public, you know, some government building would have been the craziest thought in
absolutely,
their minds.
Absolutely, absolutely. Right, and the idea that a pastor couldn't say who you should vote for, or, you know, what political stand you should take, that's ridiculous as well. I mean, the church is supposed to take those kind of stands. It's just that the government's not supposed to tell you, oh, you can't put up Ten Commandments here, or you can't, you know, worship God there, or you can't call it Christmas. I mean, all this stuff that's coming about in modern society is just a complete and total backwards of what it was originally intended to be, and it's really unfortunate.
Yeah, and, you know, Andrew, when I was away this weekend in Phoenix, I was speaking with one gentleman involved in public and international policy, and even though when he meets with political leaders, he doesn't bring in the Bible directly, just talks about the principles because he's dealing with people from all nations and faiths and so on. But he did say that the great destruction in America comes through the 20th century and the end of the 19th century with the ongoing secularizing of our nation. So thank you for weighing in. 866-34-TRUTH. I was thinking yesterday about the best resource that we could make available to you this week that would be the most relevant, the most life-changing, the most practical, and the least expensive for you. So we've put together a special package, the best teaching I've ever done on prayer and intercession, 12 hours on foundations of prayer, 12 hours on foundations of intercession, practical, inspirational, life-changing, on two CDs for your computer MP3 player. We've cut the price in half, plus we're paying the postage, so it's just $20 for 24 hours of teaching, postage paid. Call us at 1-800-278-9978 to order. That's 1-800-278-9978. One more time, 1-800-278-9978. This teaching will strengthen you. Tomorrow we're going to focus on prayer the entire hour. We'll be back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
There are more and more discussions taking place today about the faith of our political leaders. This is something that happens every 4 years with our presidential elections. I remember after Reagan was elected, because he was so much a champion of the religious right, that there were people with Bibles on TV interviews and quoting scripture, and thought this is wild, even though Reagan himself was not a particularly religious man. Rick Perry speaking very openly about his faith, and then editorial coming out in USA Today by David Gushee, who himself is distinguished professor of Christian ethics at Mercer University and identifies as evangelical. And he says these Christian politics are creating unholy alliances. This is bad. It makes me wonder, okay, how much influence should we have? How much should we be looking to rise to the top? How much should we be looking to, quote, take over? Is that the thing we should be doing as believers? Hey, we're here to take over. We're here to take over because we want to rise to the top in every aspect of society as believers. And hey, aren't we glad when we hear that so-and-so who's a committed believer is now on the faculty of a secular institution, or so-and-so who's a committed believer is now elected politically, or so-and-so who's a committed believer is now a university president, or so-and-so who's a committed believer is now leading this particular business? On the other hand, doesn't this rightly raise the concern that we're going the way of Christian theocracy? We're going in the way of trying to establish America as a Christian nation. What does that say for those who are not believers? And what does it say even for what the role of the gospel is supposed to be? And why didn't Jesus fight for an earthly kingdom if that was the goal? 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Online, askdrbrown.org. Click on the line of fire. By the way, I really encourage you to go online later today and listen to the first hour of broadcasting. It was very informative. I had a guest on who was a strong proponent of homosexual men and women serving openly in the military. And we had a civil discussion, brought a chaplain on as well, and other callers. I think you'll find it very, very enlightening. And you can listen to that online on the Line of Fire website. Also, because I didn't take your questions Friday afternoon, if you've got some random questions, I didn't take phone calls on Friday. If you've got some random questions that you want to call in with, I'll take some random questions as well. 866-34-TRUTH. By the way, I just want to mention this publicly, and I trust, sir, that you're listening. I was speaking at a Messianic congregation Saturday afternoon, this past Saturday, so just 2 days ago in Phoenix. And a young man came up to me, introduced himself, and said that he began listening to me the first day that the broadcast Line of Fire began airing in Phoenix. We launched on 14 major national stations with a big expansion on March 14th. He said he started listening that day and has listened every day since. So there you go. It's a tough record to break, but now you got to keep it. You got to keep it going. Like 30 years from, I haven't missed a broadcast. 30 years from now, be 86, right? That'd be interesting to see where the world is at this point. 866-34-TRUTH. Let me go right to the phones. Daniel in Des Moines, Iowa, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Brown.
You're welcome.
My personal opinion, nothing would bless my heart more than to have a born-again believer, you know, standing in the present spot. At the same time, with how secular the world is and how many other religious beliefs there is, it could be a, you know, if we demand Christianity be the center, you know, Christ is the head. That'll be the perfect government for us that are saved. But at this point, my personal opinion would be, yes, Christian rule of ethics, morals, values.
Right, so to have that influence, yep, would be positive overall. All right, thank you, sir, for weighing in. You hear the music, we got a break. Back with more calls. Stay with us.
Oh, God of burning, cleansing flame, send the fire.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, so what's bad, potentially bad, about this idea of an overtly Christian president or candidate saying how Christian they are? I mean, isn't that something we need? The great majority of the nation professes Christianity. It may have gone down from 85% to 75% in recent years, but still the vast, vast majority. And isn't it true that there are many Judeo-Christian principles that lie at the foundation of our nation and have influenced our history? And isn't it true that there is an ongoing secularizing of our society, an ongoing denial of God, and a push for freedom from religion, so that you have universities where you've got professors all the time trying to influence students to anti-faith positions, to mocking God and the Bible, and yet if you're a professor in a secular institution talking about God, well, you can't talk about God. On the other hand, don't we have bad precedents already, like, you know, Constantine declaring Rome to be Christian, and now you just get into kind of a state religion, or maybe something less extreme, that you now try to enforce Christianity on people from the top down, as opposed to winning people to the Lord and serving from the bottom up. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Also, time and show flow permitting, I'll take your questions on any random subjects that you normally would have called in with on a Friday. Before I go to your calls, let me read a bit more of the David Gushee column. Again, he identifies as an evangelical, and he's a distinguished professor. They're at it again. Republican presidential candidates are trolling for conservative Christian votes. Christian political organizers are trolling for Republican candidates' attention. The next occasion will be the Republican candidate debate sponsored by the family leader in 2 weeks at a church in Des Moines. The Democrats, too, will make some effort to join this game as they did in the 2008 cycle. Once again, a presidential race is becoming a piety contest. As an American and also as an evangelical Christian, I can hardly bear to watch this nightmare unfolding all over again. It's bad for America. It's bad for Christianity. Here's my take, he says, on the sorry spectacle of Christian politics and how to fix it. This, in a nutshell, is his problem, or he says this is the problem. Politicians continue to use and abuse the language and symbols of Christian faith in order to win political support. They speak of God, Jesus, Christian faith, and Christian values. They bow their heads in prayer at a million chicken dinners. Then Christian voters, perhaps flattered, perhaps reassured, think that these evocations of holy Christian symbols and terms actually mean something. And playing the God card, politicians often deploy religion as a kind of tribal identification. Sarah Palin was extremely good at this in 2008, referring to the U.S. as a Christian nation and to small towns as the real America. It used to be, he writes, that only Protestants could play the religious tribalism card in the USA, but that changed as conservative Protestants and Catholics banded together over social issues, such as abortion and same-sex marriage, that hold sway in the Republican Party, as well as the voting booth. Some conservative Christians are tempted to look for the candidate who is or appears to be most clearly a member of their religious political tribe, rather than focusing on the candidate's resume, skills, foreign policy, proposals, or more full domestic agenda. These voters check off the Christian box and look no further, just as some liberals check off a candidate's pro-choice or pro-union box and do the same. Okay, I've addressed some of this in my article about the myth of a political savior. Don't look for a political savior. Don't look for an individual to be the savior of the nation, this Christian leader that's going to turn everything around, and how we can wrongly look for these particular things. That being said, is it wrong to say, well, look, America's become so secular. What, we're not allowed to have Christian political leaders? We're only allowed to preach? You know, Sunday school teachers, pastor? No, not in the public square. So where do you weigh in on this? 866-34-TRUTH. Danny in Garner, North Carolina, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hey, Dr. Brown, I love you, man. Keep fighting a good fight. I just wanted to say, regardless of what atheists, all the other unbelievers say, without a doubt, we know that this country was founded on Christian doctrine, the God of the Holy Bible. This country was founded on that. Our laws reflect that. And the reason why we know this, the trick of Satan and all of his demons, the reason why they want to keep Christianity from continuing to progress is these are the people that don't care anything about God. They don't care anything about sin. They're deceiving themselves, and they're thinking they're not ever going to be held accountable. So they're in denial about who created this earth, what he has done through Jesus Christ to save our souls. And to get that out of the schools and to get that out of the public place and to take it out, remove that foundation from the United States is basically going to lead to our ruin. And so they know what they're doing. And on the second hand about, you know, these politicians, no, we're not looking for a perfect politician. You know, there was no perfect man but Jesus Christ. But we are looking for the qualification, especially as Christians. We don't go out and vote like the world votes. The world votes for all kinds of other reasons. But we as Christians, we have the Holy Bible. If a person is I mean, they done hoodwinked us a couple times. They done told us they were Christians, like you read that little article about how they go to chicken dinners and pray and all that kind of stuff. They do all that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah,
the
yeah.
interesting thing about that is nobody seems to want to look at these people's past policies who profess to be Christians and see if these policies reflect what they say they believe in. We should know a tree by its fruit. And some of their policies in the past have not reflected the God of the Bible at all,
oh, yeah.
like, for instance, abortion.
Yep, very
so
clear.
So I think
hey.
We just need to do our homework, Dr. Brown. And if we say we're Christians, we need to open our eyes up to the Word of God and have a biblical worldview about this thing. And remember that our allegiance to Christ is first of all and foremost.
All right. Hey, Danny, thanks for weighing in, and thanks for sending the love this way. I appreciate it, man.
Yes, sir. God bless.
All right. 866-34-TRUTH. Cindy in Portland, Oregon. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Brown. This is the first time I've heard you on the air, and I appreciate what you're saying.
Thanks
and
for
I just
listening.
Wanted to comment. Oh, pardon me?
Thanks for listening.
Thank you. I just wanted to say that everyone around the world wants to come to the United States. And then when you look at it, why do they want to come here? They want to come here because they have freedom. They can practice the religion that what they want to practice. And the reason has been is because we were a Christian nation, and it was founded and it was blessed by the Lord, you know. And at the same time, if we were to go to Sharia law or communism, that would put us totally in bondage. And it would defeat everything that the people, when they would come from other countries, would, you know, it would just defeat that whole thing. The people, even if you're an atheist, you would not want to go under Sharia law. You know, it's either their way or there is no other way. So
right, so the point that Christian principles in our nation, from our founding fathers, whether they were all committed Christians or not, but these principles are the things that gave us liberty. These
That's
are the
correct.
Things that are in contrast with Sharia law. Look, I mean, you have issues with servicemen in Saudi Arabia having Bibles, because of Sharia law in Saudi Arabia. And obviously we know about liberties under communism and atheistic regimes. So that would be an argument to say that to the extent that we live by Christian principles, to that extent, this brings us a country with liberty and freedom for everyone.
Correct. Very well said, Dr. Brown.
Well, hey, thanks for getting us in that clear direction there, and appreciate you listening and calling in.
And thank you so much. Continue the good work.
All right, thanks. Hey, it's so interesting. Most folks I talk to have listened to radio for decades and have never called in or called in, only once or twice. So I find it fascinating when someone listens the first time and calls in. The first time, maybe just someone calls in regularly. But don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. I'm glad to have you listening. But don't be afraid to call in. 866-34-TRUTH, especially on a day like today when I really want you to get, and I really want to get to both sides of the story or different perspectives as opposed to, you know, if you call me, I'm coming from the opposite perspective here. All right. George in Springfield, New Jersey. Springfield, New Jersey? Is that right?
Yes. Hi, this is George.
All right. Where is Springfield, New Jersey?
Well, right outside of Mount Holly. We're between Philly and Trenton.
All right. Somehow I didn't know Springfield. All right. Live and learn. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah. I'm a pro-life activist ever since I became a Christian in the early 80s, and I was involved with Operation Rescue. Mother Teresa, Jerry Falwell, Dobson, James Kennedy, they've all said that we're going to rise and fall on this this issue. Our nation, government's supposed to protect life, and we seem to have lost that battle for life. Now it's accepted. You know, Operation Rescue, 10 times more people were arrested nonviolently than the civil rights movement. And half the time period, we had 17,000. Civil rights movement had 1,700. That was a move of God, and people have gotten away from that. I go outside these abortion mills to try to offer the moms help and that, and a lot of them do anywhere between 40 to 80 a day.
Hey George, hang on the line. All right, we got a break. But stay with us.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us, friends. I'm going to weigh in briefly with some of my thoughts towards the end of the broadcast. I want to hear more from you during the next few minutes. And hopefully tonight I will feel moved on with some good ideas to write an article about how Christian our president should be, or how much we should be seeking to, quote, take over areas of government or office. 866-34-TRUTH, online, askdrbrown.org, click on the Line of Fire. By all means, listen later today to the first hour of broadcast. That would be 2 to 3 Eastern Standard Time. You'll find a very enlightening discussion with different viewpoints about the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. So, George, back to you. You were saying our bottom line issue is the shedding of innocent blood,
the abortion going on.
Yeah, ultimately, now, of course, I've got dear friends that are involved in this day and night Bound for Life movement and Justice House of Prayer movements and things like this, where this is what they live for 24/7. But you're saying national consciousness, you feel it's waned somewhat. What about the idea, though, of the importance of having, quote, a truly Christian president? Do you think that that's essential in the battle for life?
Well, of course, if the president is truly a Christian, then he's going to respond with pro-life legislation that's going to protect children. You know, Obama showed clearly that he wasn't a Christian because he voted 5 times if there's a late-term abortion, the baby survives, to still kill that child.
Yeah.
6-month abortions are very commonplace now. We go outside these abortuaries. The numbers have diminished. People, the church doesn't care anymore. We used to do the sit-ins. We could have turned the country around. The Bible tells us to rescue those unjustly sentenced to death, not to stand back and watch them die. And that's what's happening, is the church is just grabbing on to the blessings. It doesn't want to sacrifice. And the next generation is being exterminated right in front of us. You know, Romans 13 says, you know, love does no harm to its neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfillment of the law. We're not loving our neighbors, and blood is essence. Life is essence. Even Jesus, when he was going to the cross, he said, the poor you always have with, but I'm going to die today. So there's a priority. And the pulpits used to chime about it in the late 80s, early 90s, but now they're silent. They won't say anything. Only some of the Catholics will. But we're living alongside all this slaughter, and that's got to be a number one issue. We were all that child in the womb at one time.
Right. Hey, George, I just want to let your comments stand to sizzle in the ears of our listeners. But when you have some time, look up Bound for Life. I want you to be encouraged with what others are doing. But thanks for standing on the front line, sir, and reminding us of the critical, literal critical life and death importance of this issue. We're privileged at FIRE through the years, through our existence, to be working with other ministries that are on the front lines in front of abortion clinics and offering alternatives to abortion and speaking up. But George, you're absolutely right. There's the silence in many, many circles is deafening. Thank you for calling in. Inez in Greensboro, North Carolina, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hello? Am I on?
Yes, is it Inez or Inez?
Yes, yes, thank you. And also, I would like to thank George for his comments. I think this national disgrace now at, what is it, 50 million abortions have happened here.
Yeah.
My comment, Dr. Brown, is whether we should deliberately choose Christian leaders and vote for them. And I don't have my Bible in front of me. I'm in the car, but I seem to recall Jesus said, I give you a new commandment that you love one another. And shortly after that, he said, in honor, preferring one another. And I don't know exactly what that means, but it sounds like you would put them in positions of honor. So I think it's almost like a commandment to vote for like-minded people.
All right. I wouldn't see those scriptures as pointing in that same direction, or let's just say I would interpret those verses differently. However, the idea of, for me, if I knew, let's say, that there were two candidates who were equally qualified, right? And one was a man, one was a woman. Ultimately, if I was voting, they were equally qualified in every way. Just because I see governmental headship primarily as being male, I would vote for a man. But if the woman was more qualified, I'd vote for the woman. If it was black versus white, wouldn't matter to me. Jew versus Gentile, wouldn't matter to me. If it was a matter of someone who was a committed follower of Jesus and someone who wasn't, and they were equally qualified in other ways, oh, there's no question I'd be voting for the believer. Absolutely no question whatsoever. But thank you for weighing in. I appreciate it. 866-34-TRUTH. Oh, do I have time for one more call? Yes, Eowyn in Clearwater, Florida. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hello. I just wanted to say something about, you mentioned before a couple times about this Christian takeover. You used that term a couple times. I think the thing that we should focus more on is not so much that Christians are taking over things, but that the person who we elect into office has given over their life to a faith, preferably Christianity, but has some standard of that's guiding them, that has a higher power that is helping them through the things. Because I really don't think that I could trust a political candidate who did not have a faith, who did not have a sense of a moral compass, that did not have standards that they would follow, that I could trust them to follow.
So, but for you, though, any higher power, any faith would
no,
be...
No, not anyone. But, you know, I would prefer somebody, you know, a Jewish man or woman as president who has a moral compass, that they follow guidelines that are in Scripture, they follow God, you know. I prefer that over an atheist. Of course, I would ultimately love to see a Christian who was believing and following what he says he believes, but... If somebody is believing, a Jewish believer is president, I would vote for that over an atheist or someone who is obviously not, does not have a clear direction.
Okay. Right, so the key thing would be that there is a moral compass, and you feel ultimately that would have to come in a faith-related way, preferably biblically based. Of course, sadly, the great majority of Jews in America today are not religious and tend to take very liberal views on issues like abortion and homosexual activism and things like that. But, hey, I appreciate the point. All right, out of time, but this is the discussion we can continue. A very, very important series that we are making available, that you'll find this very edifying, life-changing, practical, and inspirational. 24 hours of teaching on prayer and intercession, 12 hours on foundations of prayer, 12 hours on foundations of intercession will be tremendously eye-opening to you, scripturally based, life-changing. We've cut the price in half, plus we're paying the postage on it. 24 hours on two CDs for your computer or MP3 player. The number to call, 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. One more time, 1-800-278-9978. 24 hours of teaching on prayer, 24 hours of teaching prayer and intercession that will really impact you. And tomorrow we're going to focus on that as we teach right here. So 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line, we can debate whether or not the president of America should be a committed Christian. We can debate the role of Christianity in society. But what is not debatable is the role that Jesus must have in our lives. He must be the absolute Lord. And we can only be world changers if we have been changed by him.